welcome to another episode of Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle. I'm the pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. The Word Magazine series is a podcast that is devoted to an occasional commentary on theology, on doctrine, church practice. And a lot of times we do episodes related to text criticism. That's an interest of mine, and I'm a defender of what I call the confessional text. I believe we should be using the traditional text, the text of the Reformers, the text that was the basis for our great Protestant translations in many languages. Today we're going to be looking at a text issue, and that text issue is going to be in the Gospel of John, John chapter 1 and verse 18. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to make note of some feedback that we've gotten from a couple of people. Back on Friday, I got an email from Matt responding to the last episode, Word Magazine 55, on the review of the Gideon ESV. And he said, "Hello, Brother Riddle. I like your short review of the Gideon ESV. I found it helpful. I was wondering if you would do that for the New King James Version. I heard you say that the New King James Version is a modern option for the TR, if I heard you right. I know it's not as strictly TR as the KJV is, but I would find it helpful if you would review the New King James Version." So, Matt, thank you for the feedback, and I will put that in the queue of possibilities for the future. Yes, I think with regard to the New Testament, the text of the New Testament, the New King James Version generally follows the Textus Receptus. I think there's some other issues related to the New King James Version as a translation. Its use of wording, its use of capitalization of the divine pronoun, phrasing in some places. I think textually, there are probably more issues perhaps with the Old Testament with the New King James Version. I have not done a close study of that, and your email will make me think about it. I would recommend to you, this might be a little bit hard to get hold of, but if you can get hold of it, a book that was written by Alan J. McGregor a few years ago. The title of it is Three Modern Versions, A Critical Assessment of the NIV, ESV, and NKJV, the New King James Version. This was printed by the Bible League, which is a solid ministry in the UK, and it was first printed in 2004. I think there's been a second edition of it that is out. I'm not sure. You can look around for it. But it's has a charitable tone, but approaching this from the position of one who supports the traditional text, McGregor does, and it's a pretty good assessment of the New King James Version. So I commend that to you. There's also, if you go to the Trinitarian Bible Society site and look at their articles, I believe they have an article there that is their evaluation of the New King James Version. So until we're able to do a Word Magazine on that, I would recommend those resources to you. Then on Monday, I got a comment that was added to Word Magazine number 29. That is James White, Luke 23:34, The Pericope Adulteri, and Muslim Apologetics. And this comment came from Charlene. She said, "I appreciate Pastor Riddle's reply to James White's words on Luke 23:34. The Muslim apologist didn't see anything but was simply looking for any way possible to discredit the authenticity of God's word." So thank you, Charlene, for the encouraging comment. And this is Luke 23:34 is the, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do. And I believe that episode is an excerpt from a Muslim apologist who uses James White's comments, his argument that this is not authentic part of Scripture, to show that the Christian Scriptures are not reliable. And of course, we defended the authenticity of Luke 23:34, and don't think it's helpful with regard to apologetics, particularly with Muslims or really with anyone else, to downgrade the authenticity of that passage and many others within the New Testament. So, anyways, thank you for those comments, those feedbacks. Since I often have big gaps between these episodes, I don't always get to respond to particular comments, but I'm glad to respond to those. Yeah, I have a queue of ideas for future episodes, and if you ever have an idea or suggestion, you can feel free to email me, info.crbc@gmail.com. That's the church's website, and I view that. And if you had an idea, I'm not promising we'll do it, but if you have something you wish we would address, just send me a note, and I'll give it consideration. There are several things I'm thinking about. I mentioned feedback on the Gideon ESV. I did also have a friend at church Sunday say, "Okay, Pastor, now you're picking on the Gideons." I didn't mean to be disparaging the Gideons. I just think it's curious, again, that they've adopted a modified version of the ESV. I'm careful with these. I don't want every episode to be something negative. I'd much rather have things that were positive that I could commend, and I need to always try to be mixing in some of those as well. But anyway, some of the things I've been thinking about, I'd like to do one on the Septuagint. I've had this in the back of my mind for a while. Someone sometime back sent me some links to some videos, YouTube videos, where there's a person who's arguing that the Septuagint is not ancient, and I thought about doing a Word magazine related to the antiquity of the Septuagint, and also giving some theological treatment of the New Testament's usage of the Septuagint. So that's a topic that's going to take some research and a little bit of study to prepare for that, and thus far I just haven't had the time to do it. Another one I would like to do at some point, I've had sitting on my shelf for a couple of months now, Wilbur Pickering's second edition of the Greek New Testament According to Family 35, and I also have his New Testament translation with commentary that's titled "The Sovereign Creator Has Spoken: Objective Authority for Living." And at some point, I would like to do a review of Pickering's Greek New Testament According to Family 35 and his essentially what is an English translation of a majority text. So that's also a possibility. Then there's always the possibility of just looking at individual texts within the New Testament or the Old Testament. So I do have some ideas, but if you want to add some more to the hopper, feel free to do so. So let's turn, with that, all that said, let's turn to today's topic, which is the text of John chapter 1, verse 18. This has long been a controversial text. And by the way, I'm going to have a blog post on this. If you're familiar with my text notes, I've written up some text notes for John 1:18, so you can also look at jeffriddle.net where I'll have some more extensive notes. So first of all, what is the issue? What is the main issue with John 1:18? The main issue is whether or not the text should read "the only begotten Son, ha monogenes huios." That is the reading of the Textus Receptus, and so it therefore is reflected in translations that are based on the Textus Receptus, like the King James Version or the New King James Version. Or should it read "only God"? That's monogenes theos, and that is the reading of the modern critical text. So if you compared the King James Version, for example, John 1:18, based on the TR, it says, "No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, hath declared him. And so that's it. It's that phrase, the only begotten Son. Ha monogenes huios. That's the TR reading. If you look at, for example, the English Standard Version, at John 1:18, it reads, no one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at the Father's side, he has made him known. And the phrase they render as the only God, because they're following the modern critical text, which reads monogenes theos. So should it be huios, son, or theos, God? By the way, in the ESV, the note is interesting. They have a note at the only God in the ESV, and it reads John 1:18, or the only one who is God. So it suggests that monogenes and theos could be taken as two independent adjectives describing the subject and not would not be connected. So it wouldn't be saying he is the only God, but he is the only one who is God. And it, then it adds, this is interesting, some manuscripts, the only Son. Some manuscripts, the only Son. If you read that, this is referring to the TR, it's saying some manuscripts have this alternative reading, which is the traditional reading, the only Son. And as we come to the external evidence, you can evaluate for yourself whether you think it is fair or honest to say that only some manuscripts read the only Son. Well, with that said, let's, having defined the issue, let's turn to the external evidence. The external evidence is basically looking at the manuscripts, the extant Greek manuscripts and the versional witnesses, the translations, early translations. What did they read? So the TR reading, the traditional text reading, ha monogenes huios, the only begotten Son, is supported by the following Greek manuscripts. And by the way, the source for this is the current Nestle-Lund 28th edition of the Greek New Testament. I'm drawing from their apparatus for this source. So what Greek manuscripts read the only begotten Son? The following Greek codices. Codex A, which is Alexandrinus, one of the oldest texts we have in the New Testament, dated to the 5th century, Codex Alexandrinus. Also Codex C, that is the famous Ephraemi Rescriptus. But here it has the reading, the only begotten Son, in what scholars guess is the hand of the third corrector. It's also in various other Greek manuscripts, including codices Kappa, Gamma, Delta, Theta, Psi. It's also in the group of manuscripts known as Family 1, and in the group of manuscripts known as Family 13, and in many, many other later minuscule manuscripts of the Greek New Testament. In fact, this is the majority reading. It is the reading that is found in the majority of extant Greek manuscripts of the New Testament. So there would be well over 1,000 manuscripts that read the only begotten Son. With regard to ancient translations or versions, it is the reading of the Old Latin. It is also the reading of two streams in the Syriac, the Curetonian Syriac and the Harclean Syriac. Now let's turn and look at the external evidence for the modern critical text reading, only God, monogenes theos. This is supported, according to the Nestle-Lund 28th edition, this is supported by four Greek manuscripts. They include P66, Papyrus 66, Codex Sinaiticus, and it says it's there in the original hand, which means it's been corrected by some of the later scribes. It's there in Codex Vaticanus, so it's in there in the two heavyweights that were so influential for Westcott and Hort, Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. And it's also in Ephraemi Rescriptus, so the original hand. I remember I mentioned that it was in the third corrector, it was changed to the only begotten son. But in the original hand of Ephraemi Rescriptus, Codex C, it reads Monogenes Theos. Among the versions, it is the reading of the Peshitta Syriac, and it is also a marginal reading that's found in the Harclean Syriac. So we should also note with this regard that there is a variation also in the modern critical text reading that includes the article. So it's Monogenes Theos, but it includes the article, ha, Monogenes Theos, the only begotten God. And this reading is found in three Greek manuscripts. Most notably, it is in P75. It's also in the first corrector of Sinaiticus, and it's in Codex 33. So there's a little bit of a variation in the modern critical text reading. And I did not find this in the Nesselon 28, but there's a reference to this in Metzger and also in Hills, that there is apparently at least one Latin manuscript that simply reads Monogenes, the only begotten, or only begotten, or only. It doesn't include weos or theos, doesn't include the definite article, but just Monogenes. Not too many people give credence to that reading, obviously, because it has such minimal support. In Bruce Metzger's influential commentary on the texts of the New Testament, he notes that with the acquisition of P66 and P75, the modern reading is, he says, quote, notably strengthened, end quote. Even this statement is a reminder that the TR was attacked and abandoned and replaced by the modern critical texts in the 19th century, not on the basis of the papyri. They made this decision to change the reading here at John 1:18, not because of the discovery of P66 or P75, but this decision was made based on the unsealed manuscripts by Westcott and Hort. I pulled down, I have a copy of a student, a hand copy of Westcott and Hort's text, and looked at it, and sure enough, it reads the same as the modern critical text. Really been no change. So that decision was made based on the unseals, not based on papyri discoveries. And it just shows again how Westcott and Hort and the modern critical text is so heavily influenced by Codices, Sinaiticus, and Vaticanus. So that's the external evidence. Let's turn to the internal evidence. And when we turn to the internal evidence, we're asking, a couple things. We're asking, what is the best explanation for these readings? Is there a way to explain how the TR reading might have evolved if it wasn't the original reading? Is there a way to explain how the modern critical text reading might have evolved if it wasn't the original reading? Which reading fits best in the context of John, with the style of John, in the context of the passage? In this case, it'd be the prologue of John, John 1, 1 through 18. I returned again to Metzger's commentary. And, Metzger's commentary is so interesting to read. He doesn't have a lot of space, but his bias towards the modern critical text is, obvious. But it's very interesting, sometimes comical, to read his statements. He assumes that the reading, the son, the traditional reading, is, he says, undoubtedly easier than the modern critical text reading, Theos, God. So he's arguing that the modern critical text reading is the more difficult reading. If you know the canons of modern New Testament text criticism, the more difficult reading is to be preferred. He doesn't explain to us why God is a more difficult reading than Son, but that's his argument. Then he suggests that the reading Son, the only begotten Son, that this is, quote, the result of scribal assimilation to John 3:16, John 3:18, and 1 John 4:9, where we have the phrase, the only begotten Son. So he says, the reason the scribes did this is because they wanted to make John 1:18 be more like John 3:16, John 3:18, 1 John 4:9, where you have the phrase, the only begotten Son. So when I read this, though, I'm wondering, why isn't it not also possible to consider that the TR reading may be the authentic reading exactly because it makes use of a distinctive Johannine phrase, the only begotten Son, and John 3:16, John 3:18, 1 John 4:9 are proofs that this is Johannine style, and that would make the reading only begotten God perhaps a departure from the Johannine style. With regard to the alternative reading found in P75, which adds the article, the only begotten God, Metzger argues that if the article were original, then there is no good reason it would have been deleted. He suggests that the anarthous use of theos, and anarthous simply means without the article, in John 1:18, quote, appears to be more primitive, end quote. And he cites the fact that in John 1:1, theos is also used in an anarthous manner. That's the famous phrase, the Word was God. There, according to the Granville Sharp construction rule, it shows that the author was definitively wanting to say that the Logos, the Word, Jesus, is theos, is God. But in ordinary usage within John, within the New Testament, God almost always has the article. It's ha theos, literally be the God, and translations, just English translations, accommodating to our style, just use it without the article. But anyways, he sees the use of theos without an article, as in the modern critical text, as being more, so supposedly more primitive. Again, I could take that and argue contrarywise, that it would be out of step with the general usage within the Gospel of John or anywhere else in the New Testament. We should also note that in Metzger's commentary, this reading, the modern critical text reading, is given a B rating. In Metzger's commentary, he rates, or the committee, translation committee of the United Bible Societies, they rated the various disputed readings. And so this was given a B reading. But what's really interesting, if you have Metzger's commentary and you look at it, it includes, as they sometimes do, a minority report at John 1:18. And the minority report is written by one of the five members of the UBS Greek New Testament Editorial Committee, Alan Wickren. And Wickren asserts in that little text, in his little note, minority report, that the modern text reading is, quote, doubtful, end quote. He suggests it, quote, may be a primitive transcriptional error in the Alexandrian tradition, end quote. And he suggests that this is the case because there could have been confusion over the usage of the so-called nomina sacra here. I know this is we're getting a little bit into the weeds here for a popular audience, but what are the nomina sacra, the sacred names or sacred titles? You may know that in the earliest manuscripts that we have of the Greek New Testament, there are certain abbreviations that are used for, like, the name Jesus, the name Christ, the word God, the word Son. Instead of writing out the entire word, they often use the first letter and the last letter as an abbreviation. These are called the nomina sacra. And in the earliest manuscripts we have of John, the papyri, or the earliest uncials, these nomina sacra are used. And Wickren points out that The nomina sacra for son, huios, is simply the first letter, the upsilon, and the final letter, the sigma. Whereas when it comes to the word God, theos, the nomina sacra, the abbreviation, is two letters, theta and sigma. And so his point is, there could have very easily been a transcriptional error where a scribe, instead of writing, seeing the upsilon sigma, instead of reproducing that, he wrote theta sigma. And so Whitgren, in this minority report, concludes that, quote, at least a D decision would be preferable. He said this shouldn't be a B reading. This should be a D reading. So even one of the editorial committee, one on the editorial committee for the UBS, thought that the modern critical text reading was doubtful. So before I reach some conclusions, I want to go back and talk about some of the Christological concerns related to this text. You know, one of the old myths that still floats around out there is, well, we've got different textual issues, but it doesn't address any point of doctrine. That's one of the great myths. And the truth is, you cannot do text criticism and talk about translations of the Bible without dealing with doctrine and theology. I mean, you have the doctrine of the canon of Scripture, you have the doctrine of the preservation of Scripture. Here, there is an issue of Christology, because this is an important Christological term. Did John, the Apostle John, the author of the Gospel of John, did he in John 1:18 refer to Jesus as the only begotten Son, or did he refer to him as the monogenes theos, only God, or the only one who is God? What was the original reading? What was the reading that should be preserved in the text of the Bible? So you know, you might say, well, maybe the modern critical text reading in this case is valuable because it supports an explicit statement about the deity of Jesus. I mean, here Jesus is being called Theos. Jesus is being called God. And so why wouldn't a conservative evangelical, why wouldn't you want to defend that? Because now we've got a text, we can go to Muslims and say, here, John in John 1:18, you know, refers to Jesus as Theos, as God, much as traditional or supporters of the confessional text want to defend the traditional reading of 1 Timothy 3:16, God was manifested in the flesh, rather than, as the modern critical text has, he was manifested in the flesh. So why wouldn't we want to defend a what seems to be perhaps on the surface a higher Christological view of Jesus, that Jesus is God? Well, let me respond to that in a couple of ways. On one hand, the majority text's tenacious retention of the reading the Son of God, or not Son of God, but the only begotten Son, its tenacious retention of that phrasing, rather than adopting this alternative, the only God, actually, I think, argues for the originality of the phrase, the only begotten Son. I think it indicates, perhaps, that the tradition was so committed to the preservation of the original text that it was unwilling to alter it, even for what might seem to be a Christological so-called improvement. So it tenaciously holds on to the only begotten Son. And, you know, one of the things that the modern text critics sometimes criticize about the Byzantine, the majority text, or the TR, is that it has too many signs of piety. It's just trying to create a pious text. Well, here would be a place where it might, on the surface, seem to be, an improvement toward piety to have theos, and yet the traditional confessional text hangs tenaciously to the reading, the only begotten Son. As another follow-up to this, though, maybe second, we might wonder if there might have been some deeper issues here. Might there have been some Christological controversies at play in this difference between the use of Son and the use of God? And I turned to Hill's book, The King James Version Defended, just to see what he would say about this passage. And indeed, if you have a copy of Edward F. Hill's The King James Version Defended, and you look at pages 133 and 134, he does give a treatment of this passage. And after surveying the options, he obviously affirms the TR reading as being the genuine one. Let me just read from some of what he says on page 134. He says, the other readings are plainly heretical. And then he cites a study by Dean Bergen in 1896. And he says, Bergen long ago traced these corruptions of the sacred text to their source, namely Valentinus. Bergen pointed out that the first time John 1:18 is quoted by any of the ancients, a reference is made to the doctrines of Valentinus. This quotation is found in a fragment entitled Excerpts from Theodotus, which dates from the 2nd century. Then he cites another scholar, R.P. Casey, who translated the phrase in this earliest citation of John, reference to John 1:18 from the 2nd century. It says, this verse, in the beginning was the Logos, and the Logos was with God, and the Logos was God. The Valentinians understand thus, for they say that the beginning is the only begotten, and that he is also called God, as also in the verses which immediately follow it, explain that he is God, for it says the only begotten God, who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. Then Hill's says, this passage is very obscure, but at least it is clear that the reading favored by Valentinus was precisely that now found in Papyrus 75, the only begotten God. What could be more probable than Dean Bergen's suggestion that Valentinus fabricated this reading by changing the only begotten Son to the only begotten God? His motive for doing so would be his apparent desire to distinguish between the Son and the Word. According to the traditional reading, the Word mentioned in John 1:14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and there it uses the phrase, the only begotten, is identified with the only begotten Son, mentioned in John 1:18. It is not likely that Valentinus, denying such identification, sought to reinforce his denial by the easy method of altering Son to God, a change of only one letter in Greek, rather than the Son. This procedure would enable him to deny that in John 1:14, the Word is identified with the Son. He could argue that in both these verses, the reference is to the Word, and that therefore the Word and the Son are two distinct beings. So what he's saying is that basically Valentinus, a Gnostic, wanted to argue that the Son, Jesus, was not the Word, the Logos, and so he was altering these passages. So the changing of John 1:18 from huios, Son, to theos, Word, might not necessarily be a mark of someone wanting to affirm the deity of Jesus. In fact, it might be just the opposite. It might be an attempt to denigrate the claim of the deity of Jesus. And again, many of these Christological controversies are lost in the mists of the past. We can only know that the church uniformly, believers uniformly, again, I'm not talking about a church council, I'm talking about an organic process of the people of God recognizing what was the authentic Word of God, recognizing the voice of their shepherd, they affirmed that the reading should be the only begotten Son in John 1:18. Let me just read the last part of Hill's comments, this last paragraph on page 134. He says, "Thus we see that it is unwise in present-day translators to base the text of their modern versions on recent papyrus discoveries or on Vaticanus and Sinaiticus. For all these documents come from Egypt, and Egypt during the early Christian centuries was a land in which heresies were rampant." And I'll just stop there. So anyways, there could be some pretty deep Christological issues related to this text. And so let's move on. Let's move on to the conclusion. So we've looked at John 1:18, and what conclusions can we draw about the textual issues in this passage? The traditional reading, the TR reading, we find has ancient and widespread attestation. It's there in Alexandrinus. It's there in many other early Greek manuscripts from various geographical locations. And it is the reading that was adopted by the later majority text. The modern reading, we readily admit, also has ancient support. It's there in some very old manuscripts, in two papyri, although they're not uniform. P66 has one reading. P75 has a slightly different one with the addition of the article. So it does have some ancient support, but that support is limited essentially to a handful of Alexandrian or Egyptian manuscripts. Wittgren has provided a reasonable explanation for a transcriptional possibility for the modern reading resulting from confusion of the nomina sacra, confusing upsilon sigma for theta sigma. This change might also have its roots, as we've seen, in Christological controversies, the terms of which are no longer clear to us in the modern era and probably never will be clear to us. So in light of all this, I would argue that there is no compelling reason to abandon the traditional or the confessional text at John 1:18. I think we should accept the reading, "the only begotten Son," rather than "the only God" or "only God." So again, I do, just looking at this again, as I looked at the textual apparatus, I wasn't sure what I was going to find. But again, when you look at this, what you find are only a handful of manuscripts that come from one geographical location, and these have been adapted as the superior reading. And this also makes quite deceptive some of the notes in modern translations, like in the ESV, where it says only some manuscripts read "the only begotten Son." That's deceiving. That's deceptive. What if it read "the majority of extant manuscripts and many of the most ancient manuscripts read the only begotten Son"? And I believe they're careful in the way they word that, because they don't want the reader to ask too many questions about the adaptation of the modern critical text. Well, that concludes this episode of Word Magazine. And God willing, we will be back again in the future, adding to our episodes. Till then, take care and God bless.
How my soul longs for his presence, for the ever-living God. When shall I behold his face in his holy dwelling place? Now I feed on tears from weeping, while they say, "Is your God sleeping?" All these things I call to memory, and I ponder in my heart, how with throngs I moved rejoicing to his temple's sacred court. Why my soul be in despair? Why this worry and this care? Open God, my soul's salvation, him I'll praise with jubilation. When my heart despairs within me, then with call once more, as the headwaters of Jordan from the Mount of Hermon pour. Deep to deep roars out its sound, waves and rapids surging round. In the day God's love comes freely, and at night his song is with me. To my God, my rock, I murmur, how could you forget me? How? All my foes oppress and taunt me, where's your God? They ask me now. Why my soul be in despair? Why this worry and this care? Hope in God, my soul's salvation, him I'll praise with jubilation.